It's NAIDOC Week around Australia for 2017. It's a national week celebrating Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander history, culture and achievements. It also recognises Indigenous Australians' contributions to our country and our state. This year, the theme is recognising the importance and resilience of language. In Tasmania, the Aboriginal language that is used is Palawa. So let's have a bit of a look at NAIDOC Week around Tasmania. In fact, we'll talk to a few people across the course of the week in doing it, but we thought we'd start this morning with Heather Sculthorpe, the Tasmanian Aboriginal Corporation Chief Executive. Heather Sculthorpe, good morning to you. Happy NAIDOC Week.
Yeah, Leon, and to you. Nari Mapley music also on ABC Radio so far. Great music.
Indeed, and that theme is going to continue right through the course of the day. How would we welcome each other in Palawakani, Heather?
Yeah. Simple, yeah.
Oh, well, that's a pretty easy way to say g'day, I suppose. A simple method to do it.
Yes. Muna.
How far have we come in Tasmania, on your assessment, Heather, in recognising and celebrating Aboriginal history and contemporary life?
I think we started to get there. The Aboriginal Centre, of course, has been around since the early 70s, so sometimes it seems we haven't made a lot of progress. But when I remember that when we started, everyone was sort of making fun of us, there's no Aborigines in Tasmania and all the rest of it. We don't hear that so much anymore. There has been a start on people trying to come to grips with the history of this state, of what happened, of the attempts at extermination, and at valuing the culture and the people who survived. With talk of Truth and Reconciliation commissions and precincts and parks and things like that, with the displays in the museums, with people, you know, at least having a go at trying to understand what we're on about and why we get angry sometimes, then it's a bit encouraging that people are at least trying. On the other hand, when we see people still and politicians still prepared to sacrifice our heritage, especially on the West Coast, to get a few votes for the next election, I think, how can this be possible? How could this still be happening when it's such a valuable thing that needs to be protected? Even if you want to look at it as a commodity, it's valuable. But if you want to look at it as part of the continuance of a people, even more valuable. Mixed bag would be my assessment, Leon.
This is the idea of the West Coast having lots of Aboriginal heritage in the form of middens and obviously places where people lived, you know, more than 200 years ago, and then using those areas as four-wheel drive tracks particularly and for quad bikes and so on, the difficulty of doing one while preserving the history of the other.
That's exactly it, and we say it isn't possible because they make tracks. They don't just say, here's a track, we'll follow it. They put tracks through our heritage. Then they want governments to build more tracks to destroy more of our heritage, and then they wonder why we get a bit antsy. We're not trying to lock people out. We say people are more than happy to walk that area. They're amazing walks that people do and often do. And there are a whole lot of Aboriginal people who are more than happy to show and interpret that area for people who want to value it, but not through, you know, messing it up with off-road vehicles.
Can you take us back to the early days of the movement? You talk about being around since the early 70s. Can you talk about what it was like back then? You're in the thick of that sort of protest movement. What were the battlegrounds that you were fighting on then, Heather?
Ah, well, one was, are we Aborigines? People were saying, you're not, you fellas aren't Aborigines, look at you, whatever you are, you're not Aborigines. So people had to put up with that for a lot of years. It did a lot of damage to a lot of people being subjected to that, you know, as they had been. But when we started to say, no, no, we're not descendants, we're not half-castes, we're not all the rest, we're Aboriginal people, that's when they ramped it up and tried to get really nasty. So unfortunately, a lot of people suffered a whole lot of hurt and more as part of that process. Then when we said, not only that, but this is our land you're on, you come here and think you can take over this land and give nothing back. So, hey, we're here and we're claiming what is ours. Then we went further to say, yeah, and this is our cultural heritage and we're going to protect it at whatever cost. So they were the sort of major issues that we were up against, as well, of course, as looking at the discrimination and prejudice that beset people day to day. So we had to set up legal services and family services and all sorts of things to deal with people who'd been so marginalised for such a long time. So
what were the big wins that you had then? I mean, clearly you're having that fight. You must have, at different points, got the recognition and sort of the funding and so on. When were those big wins for you that
well,
put you on
pretty,
your path?
It was a pretty big one in 1973 when Gordon Bryant gave us $40,000 to establish an Aboriginal legal service. Wow, everything's happening here. That was the that's when we knew that we had a big mission that we had to fulfil. And for the first time, those people, including returned soldiers, who'd get picked up in the street and constantly thrown in jail for no visible means of support or for being drunk and incapable, for the first time they had lawyers who could defend them, and they didn't have to go to jail every time the police picked them up and mistreated them. So I tell you what, that was a real biggie. And the same with claims of discrimination. When people get discriminated against in pubs, there was lawyers and processes to say, hey, enough's enough, not happening here, buddy. So that gradually started to change. And as we went on, of course, we got more services, including the health services, which is, despite how I sound, is such a huge benefit to people to this day.
On Mornings Around Tasmania, Heather Sculthorpe's our guest this morning. It's NAIDOC Week and we're talking with the Chief Executive of the Tasmanian Aboriginal Corporation. I spent a bit of time reading Cathy Mark's essay on Aboriginal Tasmania, channeling Manalagena.
Oh dear.
In the Griffith Review. But one of the bits that she chronicles is how tough it was dealing with that racism back in the 70s in pubs, for example, in the wider community for Aboriginal people in Tasmania.
Of course, and people didn't believe it happened, and there was not always, of course, legislation to deal with it. To see now that people are still trying to water down the racial discrimination legislation that protects against that sort of thing, it's appalling that having, you know, made this little progress, people want to drag us back again. Because they're not easy things to prove. People think you can just put your hand up and say, I was offended. There's a lot more to it than that, that's for sure.
Mm. Can you talk with us about the desperation for people to prove their Aboriginality and the challenge at the moment in Tasmania? A lot of people, non-Aboriginal people, will be saying, I want to walk with Aboriginal people on this journey for more recognition, for protection of their heritage and so on. But we'll then have to look at the battle that's happening around Aboriginality and ask, well, who am I walking with? How do you explain that to people, Heather?
Yeah, no, it's not easy, is it? People must think, you know, it's crazy. But I think a lot of the media just doesn't take the time to understand what's going on. This is not about an Aboriginal community argument. It's not that at all. Well, that's number one thing to get. Mm. So, yes, there are groups who have managed to be incorporated as Aboriginal when there has not been a way to stop it. It's the way that the Australian law is set up. Everything's stacked against us. The Aboriginal community gets really either savaged or depressed when it sees people claiming to be part of the community who are not. When people them and their families have suffered for so many years and all of a sudden, you know, they're met with this onslaught from people and they say, what is this? Who are we being invaded by now? So it's that sort of thing that upsets people psychologically that starts it. Then when you see even more that it's those other people who are getting the jobs, getting the places at uni, they're the ones who are doing well, and it's them who people now say, oh, look, isn't the gap getting closed? No, the gap isn't getting closed. It's just the people who are still at the bottom of the rung are getting less visible than they used to be. That's how this is going to work.
And so it's about, for you and the group that you represent, making sure that the people that identify as Aboriginal have this strong connection to the dispossession story and to a lot of the mistreatment, I suppose, in history that we think of as the Tasmanian Aboriginal story over 200 years.
Well, yeah, I can see why you say that, Leon, and that's what it comes out of. But for a lot of younger people these days, that's not so much what's important to them in the Aboriginal community. Many of them don't know about that, and they are getting on with their lives, trying to make a go of everything. So it isn't just a story of, you know, only a story of a dispossession and failure to cope with this. It's a story of resilience and also of hope that things can get better for the people as we know it, rather than the people who will come along now and say, yeah, this is us too. A lot of the stuff that's going on, though, is stuff that people find, we can't understand it. How can you say that one year the only visible, really, community in Tasmania is the Furneaux Islands, where they've got nearly 20% Aboriginal population. And then this year, it pops up, there's Smithton with nearly 20% Aboriginal population. It just doesn't make sense. So what we're saying is that some of these processes that result in things like that need to be examined, because on the face of it, it is just not possible that for that to happen. That's even apart from which individuals have or have not brought to the system.
Heather Sculthorpe's our guest this morning, Tasmanian Aboriginal Corporation Chief Executive. Heather, how will you be spending NAIDOC Week? What does it mean for you?
Well, I don't really. I could tell you what I was going to do.
It sounds like you're trying to stay off your deathbed at the moment.
That's what I'm going to do. But there's lots of good events happening all over the state, and it culminates in the NAIDOC Ball in Launceston on Friday that everyone looks forward to. And there are lots of other events celebrating language all around the state. There's intrastate netball competitions and community breakfasts, all sorts of chances for the community to get together to celebrate us surviving yet another year.
And on the language, that seems to be the theme nationally for this year's NAIDOC. Will there be a special focus on that in Tasmania?
Sure is. There are nearly all our events are opening with language and language performances. There's quiz nights in language. There are events, kanapila, events dancing and singing in language. And there'll be a chance for the general population to hear some language at work. We're also giving the weather in language on ABC, which
indeed,
is pretty good.
Indeed, our breakfast programs will be doing the weather in language, so make sure you're listening in bright and early through the course of the week. You'll hear the weather in Palawakani on mornings. Heather, it's been great to talk to you this morning. Thanks for coming on.